Welcome to How to Build a Tent, the How to Make You Successful podcast. My name is Matt Williams. Thank you for listening to the show, sharing the show, overcoming the censorship, the shadow banning, and all of the resistance to getting this message out there. I'm just half kidding. But seriously, thank you for sharing the show with your friends. That is what helps keeping us grow, keeping the momentum going. I just really appreciate that. And I also appreciate you guys reaching out to me, suggesting interviews, suggesting topics. I love it. So keep it coming. Email me, matt@howtobuildatent.com. You can find me on the social media sites, How to Build a Tent, including Minds, the new show that apparently everyone at Fight, Laugh, Feast and all the listeners are going to. So don't miss out. Get your Minds account, minds.com. You can see the link below in the show notes. And give me a upvote. I think they call those now. When you like an article, it's an upvote for Minds. And give me a follow as well. I hope you're doing well getting through the week. It is Friday. It's Friday. It's a wonderful day. It's the end of the week. It's the beginning of the weekend. Hopefully you guys have a lot of great stuff to look forward to this weekend, including a day of rest. Do not forget the day of rest. That is important for your learning. We're going to be talking about that a little bit in the show. We're also going to be talking about the funding being pulled by the Trump administration in California and why that's important for us and understanding values of negotiation. I think that's going to be an interesting one that some people don't really consider when they're in negotiations. If they even realize they're in a negotiation a lot, sometimes people don't even realize they're negotiating and they get kind of caught off guard by that. I was looking around at things to talk about because that's what you do. It's called show prep. And I saw this article that was just came out, but it was about an interview by Bill Gates from like 3 years ago, which I thought was kind of funny. But I think that Bill Gates is a genius. I don't just think it, I know it. He is a really smart guy. Definitely don't agree with him on a ton of things. But when people like Bill Gates give advice, give wisdom for success, give wisdom about your career, you should like have your ears perk up and you should take a listen to it and not just dismiss it because he's lobbying for bigger government or he's lobbying to have more control over schools through his foundation. But there's going to be things in there that are true. I don't necessarily think Bill Gates is like the evil man that is like trying to ruin everyone's lives. He probably has a good heart and is probably in the right has the right intentions. But obviously I disagree with him. But so I would think he's not like trying to trick us and give us bad advice on certain things like career and success. So I think he is one of the people that I would really listen to and just at least consider. I mean, when you make billions of dollars and you used to be the richest man in the world and then Jeff Bezos came along, when those, you know, Jeff or Bill, can I call them by their first names, or Warren Buffett, when they talk about things, we should listen to them and consider and try to learn what we can from them to use and be successful in our own lives. And this particular conversation was about the three areas that will be high in demand. And I think that's kind of interesting that it was 3 years ago and why I really brought it up that it was so long ago, because we're kind of a couple years out now and we can see if these things are shaping up to be true. And he said this, that the three areas that are going to be highest in demand are sciences, engineering, and economics. When you have a background in those things, when you are proficient in those subjects, he said, and this is a quote, the agents of change for all institutions. So if you are an expert, a master, proficient, do you understand one of these things, the sciences, engineering, economics, that you will be considered an agent of change in institutions? And what is the importance of that? Well, there's a many different reasons of importance. One, before we even get to the career aspect of this, from a college aspect of this. Now, some people might take what I say and how I say that colleges are less valuable today than they were in the past, and a lot of college degrees are worthless. That may misconstrue that, and or I'm not going to be like politicians and blame it on other people. Like, I apologize for people misunderstanding what I said, where they're not really apologizing for what they said, but I'll take some credit for it. Maybe I didn't communicate this as well, or possibly, where it seems like I'm totally against college. I'm not totally against college. I'm totally against worthless college degrees, and I'm against just going to any college regardless of the price. We should be considering it just like in every purchase we do, for every product, for every service, which is what a university is. They're offering a service of education. We should be evaluating the return on investment, which includes the cost of tuition. So all that being true, I think that these three areas would be good places to get a degree in: the sciences, engineering, and economics. Now, economics is one that I am passionate about. I am the nerd who was always in the front, always answering the questions, always doing all of the homework that everyone tried to copy and borrow from me, which I did not let them do. And I love economics. I'm fascinated by it, again, because that's where the power is. And if you can understand how not just macroeconomics work, but microeconomics work, you are going to be more successful in your business ventures. But also, it's interesting to see how economics play into the political scene, just like what we're seeing with the trade war in China and the United States, which is funny. I was listening to a Fox News segment. It was actually a Fox Business segment. And there was like three people on the panel, and then there was the host. And they were trying to talk about the trade war without actually saying trade war. Like, somebody told them to, on the show, like with the producer or whatever that talks to them in their ear, was saying, do not say trade war. So they were calling it a whole bunch of other things, like trade dispute, this trade disturbance, or the negotiations on trade. And one of them almost said trade war, and then they stopped themselves. Like, they're trying not to be negative about this whole process, which is kind of funny. It's either they are just trying to like frame an argument or frame what's going on in the news with, you know, a spin or bias, or they have a lot of money in stock and they don't want to see the stock market go down because of them talking about the trade wars. Anyways, what was I saying with that? Oh, that's because that's why economics is so fascinating to me, because economics has such an impact and is applicable in so many areas. And that's where a lot of the power plays are. And again, I've mentioned The Ascent of Money. It's a great, great documentary or history video. I don't know. I guess it's technically a documentary about how money came in and the plays it and the influence in wars and the influence in kings and leaders and how like the ghettos started lending money because the Christians didn't believe in usury, and it was such a fascinating show. I'd really recommend it. Engineering, sciences, those are all going to be things that are needed, but in more part, the agents of change. Now, you don't have to be in sciences and engineering and economics to be an agent of change in your company, but you have to be a visionary. You have to be forward thinking. You have to be articulate, political, and not in a negative sense, but you have to be able to work, bring coalitions together, bring people with different perspectives, different goals together to create this change, to be an agent of change. And why is an agent of change so important? One, you are bringing value to your company. You're bringing value to the customers your company serves, whether it's another business, whether it's another consumer, but also it leads to not only job security for yourself, but most likely promotions and bonuses, because it is rare for an employee to be an agent of change. In fact, those are the superstars that you want to hold on to. If we were talking about products, it would be the cash cow. This would be the cash cow of employees, the one who is giving way more back to the company in value than what they are being paid. And those are the people that do not have to worry about job security. They don't have to worry about being valuable to a company and getting those promotions that they want. If you are continually working to be an agent of change, a positive change in institutions, then you are going to be successful. You're going to climb the ladder. People are going to want to be a part of what you do. The funny thing about corporations and projects and people that are rising to the top is when you are successful, when an initiative is being successful, or when a strategy is being successful, everyone wants credit for it. Everyone wants to be part of the ride. You know your project is not going well when no one's showing up to the meetings. But when it is going well, when you're starting to get traction, people start to come back to the meetings. They start wanting to answer emails and all that good stuff because they want to be part of the project. No, that's a little funny thing. But yes, agents of change are a good thing. If you are going into your career, you may want to consider sciences, engineering, economics. If you're looking for a hobby, you may want to just learn about those things. Or career transition, that might be an opportunity for you as well. But remember, even if you do get a degree in engineering, it doesn't mean you have to pay for the most expensive school all the time. Just a thought. The next thing I wanted to talk about, which is so great, it's an article talking about how important it is to learn well and thinking back, and they were going back and kind of talking about a lot, and they didn't say it was classical education, but a big element of classical education, and that is the teaching effect. That it is important if you want to remember things, if you want to cement, solidify into your brain things that you learned, you need to teach it and you need to articulate it. And they were talking about this research that shows that when we teach what we learn, they said something magical happens, but I just think this how our brain was created to work. It's not really magical. That these we get to see these benefits from teaching. You notice mistakes in your thinking, which I can attest to. I like got to the first bullet point and I stopped. I stopped myself. It's terrible. I'm on a tangent spree today. We're only halfway through the show and I'm only on my second talking point for the day. This is not going well. But noticing mistakes. And this is so true. When I was preaching before at church or a men's group or a high school or wherever I was doing, I have a very logical brain. And so I build my arguments. And when I would do it, I would write it down and then I'd start to speak it. And then I would start like, oh, wait, like I'm rehearsing it. I'm teaching. I'm speaking. I'm usually preaching to my wife. She is my beautiful soundboard. And I will say something and then it'll just trigger like, oh, that doesn't make sense or that's not right. Or there's a hole in this argument right here that I need to fix. It is so true. When you start audibly speaking, when you are putting things out in a teachable format, when you do a podcast even, you start noticing errors in your thinking because you want to be solid. This is going out to the world. If you're teaching, you're teaching to a bunch of people, your peers, or not, I guess it wasn't pupils, your pupils, not peers. Maybe you're teaching other teachers. I don't know. That could happen. But you want to make sure what you're doing is sound. And then sometimes it's like you kind of are speed reading or gazing over something. You're not really listening. And you kind of learn that way. But then when you have to actually articulate it, when you have to go through the motions and you start, that doesn't make sense. Or, there's a misstep in thinking there. So that is a really good encouragement. If you want to learn something, start a podcast. You'll really learn what you're talking about. Either you're going to get negative feedback if you don't catch it, or you'll catch it yourself. The second point, that was a very long conversation about one point. So the second point of why it's beneficial to teach what you learn is you get more creative as you're articulating things. I think you get more creative with experience too. The more you teach something, the more you teach a subject, if you really enjoy it, if you're really passionate about it, if you're really thinking of others, you'll find ways to be more creative in delivering the message, delivering the subject, and learning more about it. I notice this in teachers. The people that really love teaching are great, enthusiastic teachers. The people that are just getting the paycheck and checking the box are really boring. Please turn to chapter 3 of your math book and you will have your first lesson. It's terrible. It's boring. They will do the same thing for 30 years and they're not learning. But for those who are passionate and want to learn and expand upon the subjects that they are teaching, they will become more creative. And you can see that in like teachers. The third point is ideas become sharper. You become more clear and precise. So true, especially when you start debating people, which is kind of like a form of teaching, right? You're trying to teach people, instruct people, reveal to them your side, persuade them of your side. That's the good old iron sharpening iron. You remember things longer. That's definitely true for me. When I'm going through a subject, I always remember, or like when I'm preaching, I remember the sermons I preach about. The sermon I saw like last week on Sunday, I don't remember at all, usually. Not a knock on the preacher or the sermon giver, but that's a knock on my terrible memory. Also, you see patterns more effectively, which I thought was an interesting one. Now, I was thinking, like, it doesn't just have to be teaching, probably, but more like you are going through the motions, you're embodying the lesson. And maybe that is, like, you learn, let's just take a sport, for example, like playing tennis. I watched a YouTube video where I was learning how to serve correctly. And I could just remember all the different steps I needed, the mechanics I needed of how I needed to stand, how I needed to move my arm. And I would probably remember it for a little bit, but if I never did it, I would totally forget how to serve. But what do? I watch the video, or I take the video with me to the courts, and I do repetition over and over again. And more so than just teaching somebody something to remember it, it's actually going through the motions, embodying what you're learning. And I think that is more of the objective. So you may not always have the opportunity to teach somebody the subject you're learning, but look for ways to live it out, to audibly or physically go through the motions. Maybe it's a celebratory dance, I don't know, or a learning dance, and you're not really celebrating anything. But some way for you to kind of go through the motions, because I think, and I could be wrong, I'm not a brain expert by any means, but the more that you can attach other things to the experience of what you're learning to trigger your brain, I think the better it is to recall and to learn something. That's just my limited experience with thinking about how I learn things. The more I can tie events to it, because I'm not really good at picking up something out of midair. Like, oh, do you remember what we said on such and such day? And I don't remember anything about it. Like, I'm not going to be able to perfectly recall something like that. But if you start talking about the experience, or talk about where we were, the smells, the colors, or wherever we were, then I start remembering everything perfectly, because I need those triggers of other events. And the more we can tie those triggers to the thing we're learning, I think that's what we're getting at here with being able to go through the experiences. The Trump administration pulls $929 million in funding from the California high-speed rail. Now, this is near and dear to my heart because I lived in California most of my life in Southern California. I went to school there. I got married there. I lived my adolescence there. And man, is that high-speed rail project a disaster. The Federal Railroad Administration, didn't even know that was an administration. Like, can't that just be part of the Transportation Administration? How many of these freaking bureaucracies do we need to have? Anyways, they terminated a $929 million grant. The California agency repeatedly failed to comply with the terms of the 2010 agreement and has failed to make reasonable progress on the project. California has abandoned its original version of the high-speed passenger rail service connecting San Francisco and Los Angeles, which was essential to its applications for FRA grant funding. They got their funding because they were saying, hey, this high-speed rail is going to go from LA to San Francisco. And like, okay, that's kind of cool. That'll be a really fast way, a fast, cheap way to get up to the North Coast, which, if you know about California, there's a lot going on in the North, a lot going on in the South, and in the middle is a bunch of farmland. No knock on them. They're great people. And then there's Fresno in the middle. And there's a lot of business that goes on from the north into the south, and to have that would be great. But it turns out that, you know, the state is incompetent, and they pulled out. And why do I bring this up on a show, a podcast, about how to be successful? Because this is a great reminder that $929 million was being paid by 49 other states. But 49 other states were not going to use that funding. And what are you talking about, Matt? Well, you need to understand that when any state gets federal funding, that really means that 49 other states are funding something for that state. Now, why should that be so? I have no idea. I don't think that should be so. And that is one of the reasons why I believe in federalism, that states' rights are important, that states should be taking care of themselves for the most part, excluding making commerce available and like making it run smooth from state to state. I think there's a role for the national government there. But when you talk about infrastructure, that should not be a federal thing, because all that means is other states are subsidizing things for other states. And why should our tax dollars be taken from us to go spend money for other people that are not around us, that are not in our state. Could be across the country. No, your state should pay for your own things. And why is this important? Because these spending initiatives, these spending, bills, laws, whatever you want to call them, these grants that are given, come from our taxes. And when we have higher taxes, we take less risks because it is more risky because the payoff is less. The higher the payoff for things, the more initiative we have, the more incentive we have to take risks to start businesses, the more money we make, the more profits we make. So, and it's important because this is going to come up again because the Democrats, and it seems like Trump hints at it from time to time, wants to always have these infrastructure spending bills, and they want to put them in places where they need votes. California is a place where the Democrats need votes. If they lost California, they would lose their claim to popular vote, and they would lose a big chunk of the electoral vote. But that doesn't mean it's beneficial for us. So when you hear things like infrastructure spending by the federal government, just remember what it's really saying. You are being taxed for from 49 states to fund projects in a single state that most likely you'll never use. So why should you be paying for something that you'll never use? It never made sense to me at all. States should pay for their own infrastructure because, hey, you use your own state's infrastructure. It's amazing. It's amazing how this works. All right, now the last thing I wanted to talk about, and I have been going through quite a bit of negotiations of late, and this is something I think I've talked about before with contracts, and I'm going to make it quick because we're running out of time. But please remember that individual parties, individual people on both sides of the table have different values and they have different goals. And if you just remember that in any form of negotiation that you're taking, employment contracts, vendor agreements, car buying, home selling, all of these things, if you will just remember that you have a value system, you have what you want to get out of something, you have a perspective, you have a goal, and the people you are talking with might not have those same goals, values, perspectives, you are going to be far more effective because you will know how to, if you have that understanding, you will have a strategy to try to understand what they want, and you will be less frustrated when they do something that doesn't align with your values and your goals and your objectives, because it might seem strange what they're doing because you're seeing it through the lens of your own objective, your values, and your goals. But if you realize they have a new set of values, objectives, and goals, then maybe things will make more sense and maybe you can be more successful in those negotiations. All right, now let's go out, have a great weekend, and be successful. God.